Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everybody. This is Parrish Alford with the Journal, and you have tuned into Double Coverage, a production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. We're glad you've chosen to click in with us today. Lots to talk about. A historic time in the life of Mississippi State women's basketball. Logan Lowry is here with me. He's going to talk about that a little bit. We'll hit some baseball. It'll be an egg on the diamond this week at Swayze Field. Starting tonight, a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. We always like those. Mississippi State visiting Ole Miss in baseball. Spring football continues. Logan, how are you, man?
I'm sort of recuperating from my trip to Oklahoma City, but don't have long to do it. I'm in Starkville for a day and a half, and then I'm hitting the road for Dallas. I'll do that a little bit later today and have coverage, you know, for as long as Mississippi State's still in this thing. And, you know, they obviously make the Final Four, playing against UConn, and that's going to be a tall task for Mississippi State Friday night, 9 p.m. tip-off. Isn't that great, Parrish? I'm sure you'd love to have a few more of those in your life.
Yeah, everybody likes a 9 p.m. tip-off, man. We all need that. But, you know, the women's tournament, Logan, it's all about, you know, fitting it in around the men's tournament and the TV windows. And I know they try hard not to go head up against the men's tournament. Sometimes it's unavoidable. And obviously, you know, you're going to have competing TV windows at some time. But with the Final Four in place on the men's side, too, I guess that 9 o'clock on Friday spot was open, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I've had a few 9 o'clock, you know, kickoffs here lately, too. So I guess the 9 o'clock tip in basketball is, you know, typically your basketball game is going to last about 2 hours, whereas, you know, these football games now, they're all televised, they go about 4 hours. So, yeah, I guess I'd rather have a 9 o'clock basketball tip than 9 o'clock kickoff.
Hey, folks, before we move on, I want to remind you about a couple of other podcasts to be on the lookout for. Check out The Memo, a news podcast from the Daily Journal with Brad Locke and Derek Russell, coming to you every Wednesday and Friday. And for all your high school sports needs, check out Prep Rally with Blake Morgan and Gene Phelps. That's coming to you every Wednesday. Logan and I are here with you for Double Coverage, usually on Thursday, sometimes on Friday, give or take there, depending on what's going on. Logan, Mississippi State in the women's Final Four, I didn't think this was a huge upset. Baylor was the number one seed in the region. State's a number two seed, a 2 beating a 1. That's not a big, big deal. Baylor has gotten to the Elite Eight a lot recently and has shown an ability to lose that game that gets them to the Final Four. But it's a huge deal to just reach this point. And, you know, I told Richard Williams after, you know, several years after he had led Mississippi State's men to the Final Four, Gene Phelps covered that MSU team that year in 96. And I went on to the beat the next year. So I covered MSU basketball for 96, 97. But I told Richard, if I was going to write a book on a sports personality in Mississippi, I would write it on Richard Williams, because I think leading a team to the Final Four is incredibly hard to do. And as you can see, it's, 30 years now, and it hasn't happened again on the men's side. Richard kind of laughed that off. He didn't know why I would want to write a book on him. But I think, you know, a book on that team and that time would be pretty interesting. From the women's perspective, Logan, you know, obviously they faced UConn earlier in the tournament last year. They lost by, 60? Is that right?
They lost by 60 in the Sweet 16 last year in Bridgeport.
All right, so, you look, everybody knows what UConn is in women's basketball right now. You know, I saw a TV guy talking the other day that, hey, this team could possibly win 200 straight. Maybe it does. At some point, this team is going to lose, okay? At some point, it's going to lose. UCLA's men lost after 88 straight games back in the day. Having played and lost to UConn last year, most players from this team. Is that a good thing or a bad thing going into this rematch?
I don't think that they're good. Yeah, obviously, everything that UConn brings with it, 111 straight wins, all these national titles. A lot of times, I think last year, this Mississippi State team, was in the Sweet 16 for the first time for that collective group of players, and they just got overwhelmed, and they got overwhelmed early. They got a couple of early looks in that ball game. Those shots didn't fall, and everything UConn put up went in. And things just got away from them so early in that ball game, they just couldn't grasp it, and the game was over before the end of the first quarter. So, I think this time around, a lot of those same players that were on the court against UConn, just about every single one of them, are back on the court this year. And Mississippi State's a deeper team this year. They're more explosive offensively. Last year, it was pretty much Victoria Vivian, and they got the ball to her, and she put it up, and if it went in, Mississippi State was going to win. And if her shot was off that particular night, they were going to struggle offensively to get points. And this team is so well balanced. They're so deep. I mean, just in this tournament, Parrish, they played four tournament games and had three different leading scorers, and none of those three leading scorers are Victoria Vivian, who's their leading scorer on the year. Blair Schaefer was the leading scorer the first two games. Tierra McCowan had a big game against Washington, and then you turn around and Morgan Williams scores 41 on Baylor the other night in overtime victory. And, it's really just how deep they are right now. I mean, he's obviously switched the starting lineup up twice during this NCAA tournament, and it's really just they're really 10-11 deep right now. I mean, he can pretty much throw anybody out there, and they're going to be successful. But being successful against some of the teams that they've played so far in the tournament, obviously Washington and Baylor are very good teams. DePaul was a really good team as well. All those teams are ranked in the top 25. But, now they're facing the big dog. Obviously sitting there at number one, hadn't been beaten a couple of years in UConn. So, we'll have to see how they match up. I don't think UConn is as dominant as they have been in years past. But, obviously, they're still undefeated right now. Nobody's been able to knock them off. Tulane team as close as anybody. I think that was a three-point game earlier this year. Mississippi State played Tulane as well earlier this season and won 66-49. So, Mississippi State has had success against the teams and also had success against UConn, and we'll have to see if that has any bearing or whatever, but it's going to take a really good effort from Mississippi State and maybe try to catch UConn on a rare off night.
I think one of the reasons they've won so many games is that Gino Auriemma does a good job of not allowing that off night. I just think any team that wins as many consecutive games as UConn has, that team is prepared and focused. They get the mental part of the game. I think that's the biggest thing. Obviously they're talented, but when you just come to the court and bring the focus and the mental side of it, I think that's a big deal. What does have to happen for Mississippi State to win this game? Is it early success? Is it a certain player? I mean, and you mentioned UConn might not be as dominant as they have been in recent seasons. How are they a little different? How might they be vulnerable?
Well, they lost. I think it was the first three draft picks in the WNBA draft last year were all from UConn. So they've lost some talent from last year. Obviously, they have more talent still available on the bench, and they just throw some more All-Americans back out there. But at the same time, they don't have that same level of experience that they've had over the last 3 years. Obviously, Brianna Stewart led that team a year ago and had led it for quite a few years. And, obviously she's gone now. So they're not quite the offensive juggernaut that they have been. And I say that, and, look at some of the scores that they've had this year. I mean, they've scored over 100 points in two of the three American Athletic Conference. I always get that confused. And, some of the scores that they've had, they scored 100 points in the opening round game of the NCAA tournament, scored 94, 86, 90. So they're still putting up some points. And that's one of the things that Vic Schaefer talked about was it's not going to be a low-scoring game. It's not going to be a 50-48 type of game. They're going to have to score points to keep pace with UConn. And, obviously he's a defensive coach. And he talked about, meeting up with Gino Auriemma a couple of times over this past summer. And
conversations were about offense. And he said Gino was very gracious and was able to sit down and speak to him. And, you know, obviously Vic Schaefer comes from a defensive background. And he realized this year he's going to have more players, you know, score on offense than just one player. And, you know, you've seen that throughout the season that anybody can go off on any given night for Mississippi State. And that's been the case so far in the NCAA tournament. And they're going to need that to continue. They're going to need one of those players to have a big night. And so far, you know, Blair Schaefer's had that. Jerry McCowan has had that. Morgan Williams has had that. And, you know, Victoria Vivian's just hasn't been the full point of this team. Now, obviously, she scored 24 points against Baylor the other night. But, you know, right now they're going to need some big offensive night from several of those players to keep pace with UConn.
Shifting gears a little bit, let's talk baseball. MSU visiting Swayze Field for three games starting tonight. Logan, I know that State has had some issues with pitching, but there's just not a staff in the SEC right now that should fear the Ole Miss offense. The Rebels won 5-4 in 10 innings against Little Rock on Tuesday. You look up at the end of the game, they have 5 runs on 9 hits. That's not terrible, but it's when those hits are coming or not coming. Colby Bortles has increased his average. Tate Blackman has increased his. But there's not a 300 hitter in the bunch right now. And great college teams, great college hitters, they don't hit 300. They hit 350 or better. And it's just painful to watch these guys try and get around the bases right now. They're hitting 246 as a team. Bortles leads the way at 286. He's hit a lot better, and so has Blackman from the beginning of the season when they really both started very slowly, the upperclassmen there, the veterans. Pitching has been very good. They gave up the lead on Tuesday, but that was in the seventh inning when Mike Bianco was experimenting a little bit with Sean Johnson, a senior who hasn't pitched much this season. He was good against Nichols. He wasn't good against Little Rock. Okay, he came into a game in the seventh with a 2-0 lead, runners first and second. He got the first out pretty easily on a fly ball. Then he allowed the runners to move up a base with a wild pitch, and he gave up the lead on a single to left. Both runs scored and tied the game. Then the next man hits a home run, and it's 4-2. A 2-run deficit in the seventh would not seem insurmountable for most teams, but it really changes the feel of an Ole Miss game in the latter innings right now. The Rebels were able to tie the game in the eighth with only one hit. Little Rock pitchers issued 4 walks in the inning, 2 of them with the bases loaded. Ole Miss got the first 2 men on in the ninth, then bunted them ahead. So they're at second and third with 1 out. Little Rock brings the infield in. They're on the edge of the grass. You only need 1 run to win, and your next 2 guys can't get the run home. Gray Kessinger pops up softly to second base. The guy backpedals a few steps and makes the catch, and then Cole Zabowski grounds out. So you get second and third with 1 out. You need 1 run, and you can't get the run home. And that's a problem that you're probably not going to be able to overcome on an SEC weekend. The pitching side, again, it's been very good. A 2.82 team ERA right now, second in the SEC. Most guys they trot out there are going to give them a chance to win the inning. They're going to go with James MacArthur, David Parkinson, and then a change in game 3, Ryan Rollison, another freshman, replacing Will Etheridge. Etheridge got 2 starts in SEC games, wasn't as clean on the weekend as he had been as the non-conference starter. He'll be available out of the bullpen, didn't throw against The Rock on Tuesday. Tell us about the Bulldogs. What do you think about them in this series?
Well, right now, it's kind of right the opposite of what Ole Miss has got going on. Mississippi State is swinging the bats extremely well right now. Won 4 straight ball games, hitting 300 as a club. They have 6 players on the team hitting 300 or better. Right now, the top 3 guys in their order, Jake Mangum, Brent Rooker, and Ryan Gridley. Jake Mangum's hitting 407. Brent Rooker's hitting 427, and Ryan Gridley's hitting 381. And, you know, Brent Rooker is especially on a tear right now, Parrish. I mean, he's leading the SEC in batting average, slugging percentage, on-base percentage, RBI, doubles, home runs, total bases, and steals. And he's in the top 5 in just about every other category. So he is, in fact, you know, they started the year having him batting in the 4-hole. That's kind of where you've got your cleanup guy. in most cases, but he was swinging the bat so well, they moved him up to second in the order just to get him a few more at-bats in the game. And, you know, obviously Jake Mangum is doing a great job of getting on base, and Brent Rooker is pretty much driving him in with a double a lot of those at-bats and getting some runs across. So they want to start the game off hot, swinging the bat really well, and those three guys in the order are really providing that. You know, they've had a little bit more success here of late, you know, with their pitching staff. It just hasn't been as terrible as it was early on. They're still decimated with injuries. There's just not a whole lot of arms for them to go to, and I think that's going to catch up with them as the season progresses. But right now, they've been able to identify a few roles out of the bullpen. They're still kind of iffy on some starters. Connor Pilkington's pitched the ball really well for Mississippi State of late. He's really their one true weekend starter that they've got. Peyton Plumlee has been okay on Saturdays, and Jake Mangum has actually been their Sunday starter up late. So I don't know if Canizero is going to go with that same rotation this weekend. Obviously, Connor Pilkington will get the ball in the first game, but you know, it's kind of a toss-up from then on out. But you know, right now they're swinging the ball well, swinging the bats well, scoring a lot of runs. You know, they've won four straight. They've had some success. You know, obviously things didn't go start off really well when they got swept at Arkansas, but they were able to bounce back with a sweep over Tennessee last weekend and won Tuesday night in Memphis 8-3. You know, at Arlington Park, and played really, really well. Jumped to, I think they scored 5 runs in their first at bat against Memphis the other night. So they're swinging the bats well. They've just got to kind of piece it together with their pitching staff.
Well, Memphis is a team that Ole Miss had trouble with this season, lost both games to the Tigers, both of them close, one of them high scoring, one of them not. So if you want to read something into that. Hey, looking back now, Mike Bianco is, I have to go back, 16th year, 17th year, a long time, okay, at Ole Miss. I think this is his 17th season now. Andy Canizero will be the fourth Mississippi State coach that Bianco will have matched up against at Ole Miss, going back to Pat McMahon, then Ron Polk, John Cohen, and now Canizero. And we talked a little bit, Mike and I, about so many freshmen in key roles for Ole Miss. And, you know, does that take a little bit of the energy away from the Mississippi State series? Is that something he has to communicate to them? And, you know, I wonder what you think of Canizero in this rivalry, because as you look at LSU, there is no real rival over there in football and basketball, okay? No state rival. But that changes a little bit for baseball, because there's a lot of good college baseball in Louisiana, you know, whether it's Louisiana Lafayette, Tulane in given years has been really good as well. And when LSU plays those state schools in the non-conference games during the week, you know, they draw a lot of people and a lot of interest. What do you think Canizero's take is on this rivalry now in his new Mississippi perspective?
I think you'll know firsthand, you know, once he actually gets to Oxford and sees the environment. But, you know, Canizero was only at LSU for 2 seasons. So, you know, it's not like he was there for a very long time. He played at Tulane growing up. So, you know, he didn't have, you know, that much experience, you know, as far as SEC stuff. Now, granted, he was a scout for the Yankees for about 5 years. So he, you know, he's been around these clubs. He obviously knows Mike Bianco from scouting. You know, he knows him very well. He was very complimentary of, you know, the job that he's done at Ole Miss, you know, the recruiting class he was able to put together, and he was very complimentary of a lot of the young players that Ole Miss has right now, because, you know, he scouted a lot of them. He recruited a lot of them. So, you know, he's very familiar with the personnel that Ole Miss has. But, yeah, I really like the energy that Andy Canizero brings. He's a young guy. He's 38 years old. The players relate to him very, very well. It hasn't been that long ago. He was playing in the big leagues for the Yankees and the Rays, and obviously he brings that perspective of a big league ball player, a guy that's, you know, worked for major league clubs. He knows what the scouts are looking for, and he's able to relate that to the players and kind of get them prepared for moving on to the next level. And, you know, like I said, Ole Miss has a young team. Mississippi State's got a pretty young team as well. I mean, they had 11 players lost off of last year's SEC championship team to Major League Baseball or to pro baseball. But they're having to replace a lot of this. It's a rebuilding job this year. You know, right now Mississippi State is sitting at 16-10, 3-3 in the SEC. So it's kind of been an up and down season. They've lost a lot of close one run ball games. But right now it's a learning experience for the team and Andy Canizero in his first season at Starkville.
Spring football, Logan. Do you know anything different than you did a week ago?
No, I don't. not a bit. Everything's still closed up over here. I went to football availability Tuesday night. Talked to Todd Grantham. Didn't really learn a whole lot from that. And they scrimmaged once. It was closed to everybody. Don't know what happened at the scrimmage. They're scrimmaging again this weekend. It's going to be closed. All practices are closed. I saw them stretched about 20 minutes a month ago. And that's about all I know. I've covered this team since 2008, Paris. This is as little about a football team as I've ever known.
Well, we get a little more access at Ole Miss during the spring, but I have to remind myself that 80 or 90% of what goes on with this team goes on without us around. But we do watch practice a little more this time of year. We don't get run out after four periods. And we were able to watch a lot of the 11-on-11 on Tuesday, and they ended practice with red zone drills. Now, there's a change at offensive coordinator because Hugh Freeze wanted to see more consistency in the run game, in particular short yardage, and in particular the red zone. And they kind of had mixed results on Tuesday. Now Freeze has had high praise for the physicality that he's seen along his offensive line and the defensive line as well. And so when you put those two together, they both won parts of this red zone scrimmage on Tuesday. There was a scripted portion and a non-scripted portion, and the defensive line really kind of dominated the scripted portion. I don't think that the defense per se knew what the script was. I just think there was a situation there where Phil Longo, the offensive coordinator, said, we're going to run ABC, and this is what we're going to do. Well, the defense responded very well there. When the practice was unscripted, Ole Miss scored three touchdowns and really ran the ball well in the red zone. And it doesn't look like they're going to miss a beat at receiver. That's not surprising. They have recruited very well to that position in recent seasons, almost to the detriment of some other positions, especially when you have some scholarship cuts you're dealing with. But when you look at the big physical guys on the outside, DK Metcalf and AJ Brown, and then a very reliable slot receiver and Van Jefferson coming back for his second year as a starter, it's going to be a good group. It's going to be a deep group again. And Brown and Metcalf both made physical red zone catches yesterday, and you can see the talent and ability there. Where they're going to be different with their pass catchers is tight end. You're not just going to step up and replace an Evan Engram, and that's going to be done with several people. They've moved Jason Pellerin. You've heard talk about Jason Pellerin moving to tight end. Well, where Jason Pellerin, the backup quarterback, has really moved, is kind of a hybrid position. They may call him a tight end, but he's rarely going to line up next to the tackle, maybe never. Okay, he's going to be split out most of the time. He may line up in the backfield and as kind of a hybrid H-back position. They're going to do something to get Pellerin involved. And then after that, you've got Octavius Cooley, a four-star recruit who is a sophomore now, that they're spending a lot of time with, investing a lot of coaching, and really want to bring him along. And you see flashes from him. And also a name to watch there as they try to replace Evan Engram is Dawson Knox, a walk-on, very athletic, and Phil Longo calls him the bright spot of the offense in spring ball. And speaking of Evan Engram, he was one of a number of former players who were at practice Tuesday. Engram really improved his draft stock in the Senior Bowl and the Combine, and next up for him is Pro Day at Ole Miss on Monday. He'll take part in that. Beyond Pro Day, he's already scheduled trips to visit the Bears, Panthers, and Rams. The Saints have shown a lot of interest in Engram as well. So, you know, he has really improved his draft stock since the end of the season. And one of those guys, Logan, it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. You know, you do this a long time, players come and go, and, you know, and sometimes the years that they played run together, you don't remember them as well. I will always remember Evan Engram, and I told him this yesterday as we visited a little bit. I will always remember Evan Engram as a guy who came into the interview room and was just courteous and respectful as he could be. That doesn't mean that the other guys were not, but you know, players handle that room in different ways. Engram was always on time, always respectful, but also engaging. Now, some players aren't as comfortable with the engaging part. They might be quiet by nature or whatnot. They might be nervous in how they're going to answer questions and things like that. But Evan Engram always handled that process with a very calm confidence. And, you know, he's a guy that, you're going to miss seeing around. I know you have guys like that that have come through MSU Athletics as well.
Yeah, it's just funny how that happens sometimes. I mean, for one reason or another, you sort of bond or relate to a player, and you just, for whatever reason, you gel with them. And same thing happened back when I did recruiting parish. I mean, you pick up the phone and you dial a kid's number to do a recruiting story on them, and you really don't know what you're going to get when they answer the phone, if they're going to answer the phone. But for sometimes you just kind of bond, you know, you just mesh with that player, and you build a relationship with them, sort of, you know, and you're able to talk back and forth, and you, for one reason or another, you know, you just kind of connect with them. So, yeah, that happens. The same thing, you know, with the media. I mean, you get to know some of these guys. You know, some of them avoid the media like the plague, and you know, some of them are more than happy to come up in there. And those are the ones that you like, the ones that are glad to be there and are open and willing to share things with you.
Folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage, a production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. Be sure to check out The Memo, our news podcast with Brad Locke and Derek Russell, coming to you every Wednesday and Friday. And check out Prep Rally for all your high school sports needs with Blake Morgan and Gene Phelps. That's every Wednesday. Logan and I will be back here with you next Thursday or Friday. Come back and join us for another round of Double Coverage.